How's it going? My name's Megan Bailey, and I work for Forward Montana Foundation here in Bozeman. I'm the field manager, and I just want to say thank you all for taking time to come here tonight to our candidate forum series. Forward Montana Foundation, along with a variety of other organizations, has worked really hard and tirelessly over this year to put this together and to create a fun forum environment here in Bozeman that we could all come together and learn from our congressional candidates. So before we get started, I just want to thank our host committee organizations, the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman area, Bozeman Business and Professional Women, Bozeman Public Library, Centers for Community Change, American Indian Council of MSU, and Interchange Symposium. I'd also like to give a quick thank you to our host organizations, Wonderlust, American Association of University Women, the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, the Wheeler Center, Downtown Bozeman Association, the Bozeman Magazine, and Bozeman Magazine. Tonight, we have three people moderating our forum. First, we have Tate Chamberlain from Interchange Symposium. We have Devin Mahoney, a senior at Bozeman High School and a former Forward Montana intern. And Chris Griffin, a local talk show host here in Bozeman. And with that, I'd like to welcome our two candidates to the stage, starting with our Libertarian candidate from Proctor, Montana, Mr. Rick Breckenridge. Next, I'd like to welcome current State Superintendent Denise Juno.
So our first question will be regarding public lands, and we're going to start with a response from Mr. Reckenberg, and then Superintendent Juno will follow. So our first question is, what do you think should be done to improve the management of our public lands?
Do we introduce ourselves first here, or are we going to... And then go into the question? Is that how we want to do it?
Totally, yeah.
All right, okay, good. That's kind of how I saw it. ladies and gentlemen, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. All right, my name's Rick Breckenridge, and I'm a surveyor from Proctor, which is in North Lake County. I've been a surveyor in registered land surveyor, professional land surveyor in Montana since 1994. I've worked a BLM surveyor 1984. So I've been around a long time. If you've ever used the cadastral mapping project, that was my baby. That was my idea. So the influence that I have on this state is pretty dramatic in the land use area. And if you've ever used that tool, you've noticed that you've never seen my name on it. That's how we work together. We brought everybody to the table on that. We brought counties, we brought cities, state, the feds, and we all put everything aside for the greater good because we realized that the end result was greater than the sum of the parts. And that's how we accomplished something of that great magnitude. I'm here tonight answering a call of duty. I'm not seeking public office, but because of a tragic incident with Mike Fellows, a friend of mine, the banner was laid aside temporarily, and I picked it up. So I'm not here seeking office tonight. I'm here putting forward and putting forth the principles of liberty that Mike had done for so long, since 1980. Now, one of the reasons that my motivations for being here tonight is because I didn't feel that the current candidates were strong enough on constitutional issues, especially the Second Amendment. You had Ms. Juno refuse to answer the questions from the Montana Sports Shooting Association. Anytime we have an idea, we need to put our ideas in front of experts and have that idea peer-reviewed, and they failed to do that. And so, and the same with Mr. Zinke. I didn't feel he was strong enough on that, and if you're weak in one area, then you'll probably slack in another. So That's the reason, one of the primary reasons, and I'm a product of public education from kindergarten to both of my college degrees, was a result of public education. And so I think that we could have done better in under Denise's tenure. We went from 24th, according to U.S. News and World Report, we have gone from 24th to 42nd. Now, regarding the question on public lands, I think we had a 3-minute introduction. We had was
yeah. Let's get introductions and then we can get
okay,
the first question.
All right, good.
Well, thanks, and I want to thank all the sponsors this evening. I am really disappointed that Congressman Zinke could not make this forum. He was in town doing honk and waves yesterday, so it seems like he could have stuck around. So I am disappointed around that because I do believe that Montanans, including Bozeman people, deserve, and Bozeman voters deserve to hear from all the candidates in a race, particularly when it's this important of a race for Congress. You know, we get one voice for 1 million Montanans, and you know, hearing your candidates and getting to know your candidates, especially where they are on the issues, to hold them accountable to their record or lack thereof, or you know, to hear about the visions for what they want to do, I think is important. So disappointed he's not here and couldn't make it. You know, it has my story takes me from Head Start to Harvard, from teaching in a classroom in Browning to leading Montana's public schools. And I've had the honor of serving as your state superintendent for the last almost 8 years. And during that tenure, I've actually worked with 58 communities across the state to raise graduation rates to historic highs, including Bozeman. And, you know, you guys have a great public education system here that performs very well, and you should be very proud of your schools here. You know, and you know, I've also made job training a priority throughout my tenure as superintendent, and there's a lot of good programs going on in the state, and I just enjoy traveling around and seeing good things going on. Oh, we also sit on the state land board and have a really good record there. The 5 statewide constitutional office holders sit on a state land board and manage over 5 million acres of state public land. And through that 10 years of the votes there have actually increased access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres, and have done natural resource development across this state. So I'm really proud of the record that I have on the state land board as well. And you know, we can dive into that as the forum continues. And I would just say, you know, it's been an interesting 24 hours. You know, Trump tweeted that this morning, and there's been a lot that's been going on at the national level. And I would just say this today, I was able, you know, after hearing the comments that candidate Trump made about women and sexual assault and the power of, you know, fame and the things that he thought he was had the consent to do really sickened me. And the fact that Congressman Zinke still stands by his man, I called him out to withdraw his endorsement of candidate Trump today, to call him out and say, these are, you know, these are something that's not worthy of a presidential candidate. And he refused to do so. He said that he's praying for him and that he hoped that he learned some lessons. But he still is standing by his man, and I think that's the wrong place for a person who claims to represent all of Montana and all its citizens to be. But glad to be here. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for your responses, and just a quick reminder of what the question is. We're going to start once again with Mr. Breckenberg, and then Superintendent Juneau will follow. So the question is, what do you think should be done to improve the management of our public lands?
As a land surveyor, I am in the trenches. And as such, I'm the only qualified expert on it. Now, you just heard that we've had land decisions on millions of acres. But that land decision, I have to come out and I have to survey it. And let me tell you, it's not nice. It's not cute. It's thick, unmanaged dog hair, you know, fur on top of each other because their management policy is do nothing. Now, I mapped in Deer Lodge County, I mapped Georgetown. You got some Forest Service land in there that's wedged in between all these private mineral claims. They're less than, some of them are a tenth of an acre, some of them are 2/10 of an acre. Now, you can't tell me that the federal government can manage a tenth of an acre. And so both Ryan Zinke and Denise have said, we will never sell public land. When you say never, you just built a wall. And never will tell you that you can't come to a good management decision on a piece of land like that. Go up to Phillipsburg in Granite County, the same thing, only this is BLM land. It's a little bit different when you work with Forest Reserve and you work with public domain. You have to know the difference between the two. And you have to know the difference between the two if the BLM is reacquired land, because we have different laws and different rules that apply. None of these are experts on that. They can't make a land management decision when they don't know how to read a master title plat or read a historical index. My first surveying job was in Phillips County, 1984. And we surveyed 40-acre tracts inside of a section of land that was public BLM land. You can't get to it. You need to analyze those and measure them against the overall goal of the management plans. All right? We've all suffered under the mismanagement and the smoke every summer for the last 25 years.
Well, I would just say, you know, I do have a great record on the land board. And like I said in my opening, on the land board, we've actually increased access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres. And I think that's great for Montana, that Montanans, we enjoy the outdoors. We have a strong heritage of hiking and biking and hunting and fishing and being outside and just taking advantage of those public lands. It's one of the places that families can get out and recreate and for free. And I think that's pretty awesome. And, you know, when we look at this race, I can see, you know, Congressman Zinke took a bad vote, and he voted for a bill that would have transferred management of America's public lands to politically appointed boards that are not accountable to the public. And, you know, he can try to wiggle his way out of it, but I stand with multiple Montana outdoorsmen and women groups that say that was the wrong vote. And so when it comes to public lands, I'm always going to stand with Montanans. And he also, Congressman Zinke, signed a pledge. He signed a pledge that would transfer America's public lands to states and private interests. That is the wrong place for somebody who claims to represent all of Montana. It's the wrong place for somebody to represent us, and the wrong pledge to take, that especially when we all enjoy being outside. I'm 100% opposed to transferring or selling America's public lands. I think that, you know, your sole voice in Congress should actually be somebody who takes Montana values and steps up to Congress and speaks the truth there and honors our outdoor heritage. And so that's where I will be on the issue when I'm elected. You can look at my land board record. We have a great record on that. And we can also talk about land water conservation funding that Congressman Zinke voted to reduce. Land water conservation funding that he said four times needed to be reformed, and really what we need to do is permanently reauthorize and fully fund that. The money's there, and we need leadership in Congress to get that stuff done.
First of all, my name is Chris Griffin, and I'd like to thank Superintendent Juneau for being here, as well as Mr. Breckenridge. Continuing on public lands in state control, the question comes from Amanda Garnett. There is a movement to transfer public lands in our state to Montana's landscape has healed me and many others. If we lose this, we would never get these back. And both of you have answered this sortively, and I'll give you a chance here to expand the question. What is your position on the transfer of public lands to state control?
You know, is that for me?
Yes, please. I'm sorry. So, Superintendent Juneau, please. And then Mr. Breckenridge, you'll have a chance to respond.
Well, I do think, you know, I'm opposed to that effort. I'm opposed to transferring America's public lands into state control or into private interests. When we transfer those lands into state control, I sit on the state land board. I know the type of resources it takes to manage these lands. I know the type of effort and manpower that it takes. And it's too much. And there's no way that the state could actually take control and start managing those lands. We don't have the resources to do that. That argument is a slippery slope into private control of America's public lands. I'm 100% opposed to that. You know, and the fact that Congressman Zinke has signed a pledge, the fact that he votes for these bills, I think, is the wrong place for somebody who's serving Montana to be. And when I step into Congress, I'm going to be 100% opposed to those efforts. And again, on the land board, I have a great record, and we expanded access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres. The Land Water Conservation Fund does help create parks across the state, outdoor recreation areas. It's a grant, federal money that comes in and matches community efforts to make sure that families can get outside and recreate. And again, I would be a proponent of fully funding that and permanently reauthorizing that. That's currently, you know, we need leadership in Congress that's actually going to get that done. So, you know, because of our outdoor heritage and because we like to be outside and recreate, I think the person who serves you in Congress really should be stepping up and being a top advocate for those efforts.
Thank you. Mr. Breckenridge?
Superintendent Juneau has just told you of her intent to not uphold the Constitution and her oath of office. Under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the federal government can only own up to 10 square miles, including and have legislative authority over it, including magazines, arsenals, and forts as needed, and post offices and the buildings to support those. Now, if you want to look at an example to counter this doom and gloom report, just look at Kansas. Kansas does not have any federal land in it other than the magazines, arsenals, posts, and post office and the necessary buildings. All right? It followed the Constitution. Now, when we look at Montana, has 29% of the state of Montana is in federal ownership. 29%. We get about $26 million in PILT money. That's less than a buck an acre in taxes. All right? Now, if we were to appraise that and have them pay their fair share, we would have the management monies available to take care of what we have right now. The public lands are, like I said, divided into three different groups. So we have to separate those out. And if you just paint with a broad brush a management plan, guess what? It's doomed to fail. It's not going to work. So if we follow the Constitution, I will uphold my oath of office. Superintendent Juneau has already said that she won't. So there's the difference right there. And the public lands is a good example of where the states can manage things better. If you like all the smoke we've had in the last 25 years, then just tell them to keep it up. Keep it up, the management of the forest, the way that they're doing, if that's what you like. I don't like it, personally. And I think that we can do better, and following the Constitution will allow us to do exactly that.
Thank you. And a reminder of don't ruin dinner, profanity includes that.
What?
There was an F-bomb.
I didn't say the F-word. I didn't say the F-word.
Oh, okay. Was there not?
No, I didn't say
that. Okay. Sorry.
My mother raised me, right?
What do you do?
So these questions came from last weekend. We hosted Story of Self-Training. Jeannie Brown and the committee were at the library, and we had community members come in and learn how to best introduce questions to candidates or in community areas and forums to better express their story. And so the next series of questions are going to be from the Story of Self-Training, and the people that put them together are here to ask them to both of you. Sorry again to say that.
All right, so our first Story of Self question will be from Susan Nichols Routon regarding voter apathy.
I'm Susan Nichols Routon. I live in Belgrade. My question is for both of you. What are the biggest issues contributing to disengagement in the democratic process, and how do you plan to re-engage people who have become disengaged? Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Juneau.
Okay. Well, you know, we are right now facing an election that nobody, I don't think, has ever experienced before. And the idea that we have this divisiveness and the comments made by a presidential candidate who talks about sexually assaulting women and who denigrates veterans' families and who doesn't speak up for Gold Star families and who makes fun of disabled reporters. There is something that's broken at that level when that kind of conversation is in a presidential election. And I would just say again, the fact that Congressman Zinke continues to stand by that presidential candidate, I think tells a lot about who he is. You know, the fact that he won't step up and call him out and not and withdraw his endorsement, I think speaks volumes for what he's engaged in and where he wants to see this country go. And I do think that there's way too much political divisiveness now. We need people who are going to be compromisers, who are going to be reasonable, who are going to be rational, stepping into public office. You know, when I was growing up, my parents were all in on making sure disenfranchised people had the right to vote. And we would go to events all the time and talk about registering voters. And my mom still carries around voter registration cards everywhere we go. And so we need to get back to that and make sure that, you know, when I step in Congress, I'm going to be that reasonable voice. I've worked with 58 communities across the state on graduation matters, and not once did I ask, what is your political background? What does your paycheck look like? It was just, here's a common challenge, and let's work as Montanans to get there and make a better future for the young people in this state. And that's the type of record that I'll take to the U.S. House.
Thank you. Our next question is on corporate influence. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Breckenridge, if you would like to answer, that would be awesome.
Look at the money that's come into just this race and how much ad time has sickened everybody by the constant bombardment of political ads. It's disgusting. Now, the walls that have been built are walls that can never be broken down. This wall that has been built in this race, in this election, by these two candidates, it's bigger than any wall that Trump could ever propose on the southern border, because we can never chip away at that. At least Trump's wall, we could put a 10-foot, 11-foot ladder and get over the top of it. This wall right here can never be broken down. And it's polarizing these communities. And they're to blame. And we're to blame for sucking it in. Now, the process is not a very nice process. It's just not, and it never has been. That's just been American politics. The thing that can change it is you and me. We can change it. We can say, come across to the yard, to the person who has a different yard sign in there, and say, you know what? I think that we have something that we have some common ground on. Let's see if we can find it. And let's start right there. Let's start with you and me. And in doing that, I think what we're going to find is that it's going to go from me and you. It's going to go from me to we to one. We will be one. But we got to take the me out of it. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. That's never going to work. That's the wall that Reagan said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And they tore down the wall, and Germany was unified. Okay, we got good examples. We just have to exercise them.
Thanks. Now it's time for the next question. This is from Jackie Corcoran on corporate influence.
Hi, I'm Jackie Corcoran. I live in Gallatin Gateway. Thank you both very much for being here. It takes a lot of courage to show up for a congressional debate. Large corporations are disproportionately influencing our democracy, and so many services and institutions have been privatized. Many Americans believe that elected officials have become more accountable to corporations than real people. As a representative in Congress, how would you deal with this challenge?
Go ahead, Mr. Breckenridge. You had second on the last question.
Okay. We've had a court case that has taken the First Amendment and skipped totally the preamble to the Constitution where it says, we the people. Taken part that First Amendment that says that we have a right to free speech, expounded upon that right even further to say, oh, you got a right to free speech, then you got a right to free speech. When we come together, we got a right to free speech, and now we got a corporation that has rights. That's pretty pathetic. But it's exactly what judicial activism has done. They've come in and tore apart our Constitution and left that First Amendment more confused and in a more confused condition than when they found it. But it doesn't stop there. It goes back even further. It goes back a long ways. Now, for us to take those things back, we have to take the idea of ripping apart and inserting rights that aren't enumerated in our Constitution. There's no enumerated right for that, for a corporation. In fact, when they first chartered corporations, you're only good for 20 years and it expired. And if you didn't provide a public good, you could never come back. That is what has happened to our Constitution. And that's how they've done it. Now, you and I can stop that. We can stop it by getting justices appointed who aren't liberal, who aren't activists. Who aren't activists in the process. That's how we can do it. We got to start there. That's where it started. That's where it has to end.
Thank you, Ms. Juneau.
Yeah, I would just say there is way too much money in politics right now. And the corporate influence is super heavy. And, you know, Mr. Breckinridge is right. The First Amendment sort of got a tortured interpretation through the Supreme Court, and we got stuck with Citizens United. And until we have a constitutional amendment to overturn that, you know, we're living in a system where corporations and have an undue influence on elections. The fact that there are these super PACs that exist, that there can be unlimited donations dumped into a pot of money that can then come into our state and we don't know who they are, and buy TV and buy radio and figure out ways to influence voters, it's a horrible place for our democracy to be. So we have to work towards a constitutional amendment to make sure that we can get Citizens United overturned so that people can have a voice again. You know, when we look at our reports as candidates, you can see who's contributing to my campaign. It's transparent. You can go in and look at it. These super PACs can take unlimited donations. They're anonymous. We don't know who's giving that money. And I will just tell you, Congressman Zinke had a super PAC. Then he stepped out, ran for Congress, and that super PAC helped him get elected. And once he was elected, he took the treasurer of that super PAC and made him his chief of staff. And I recently held a little press conference that said my first act when I'm elected will be called the Cash Act. Congress abolishes super PAC hiring. And there needs to be a cooling off period between people who are running and working for super PACs, influencing elections, helping get somebody elected, and we need to prevent them from stepping into the official side of the office. And so that's one way that we can at least start curbing people who have direct influence to stepping in and then influencing official side efforts as well and what's going on in Congress. And so there's a lot of work to be done, but that's a good first step.
I appreciate both your answers. Thank you, Superintendent Juneau and Mr. Breckinridge. But it sounds like you are in agreement that the essence is the overturnment of Citizens United. What exact steps can you, as a lone congressional representative, move forward to overturn Citizens United? And I'll start with Superintendent Juneau.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is really looking at ways that we can figure out how to stop that undue influence. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a constitutional amendment. And there is a move across this country to make sure that that happens. And we need to support that effort and make sure that we're doing the groundswell work that needs to happen so that we can make sure that that gets overturned. But it's, you know, the money that's influencing politics right now, the outsized influence of corporations on the political system. We need to end it, but it's going to take a constitutional amendment to do that.
Mr. Breckinridge.
Congress has the authority to nullify that decision. They just got to do it. They just got to have the wherewithal to do it. They don't need a constitutional amendment. They can nullify any judicial decision that has been handed down by passing a law that says it's no longer that's no longer applicable.
What will you do?
What would I do? Okay. I was going to finish my idea here, let me come to that. What would I do? It's quite simple. I would enter through the judiciary of the House, through the subcommittee, a bill that would just make that decision null and void, and that Congress would ignore it, and that they that had no power over any of their legislative actions, and then pass a law that says freedom of speech is, you know, that we reinforce the First Amendment of the Constitution is that we the people, not we the corporations.
Thank you.
All right. Our next question from the audience will be regarding paid family leave from Elizabeth Merrim.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Merrim, and I live in Belgrade. I am a mother of two who cares about family values. Increased paid family leave could give families a wider window to develop strong bonds, consistent schedules, and emotional stability. What is your position on the expansion of paid family leave? Thank you.
All right, we will start with Superintendent Juneau and then move to Mr. Breckinridge.
Well, I'm a proponent. You know, I unveiled some household economic policies recently about what I would fight for in Congress when elected. And as I travel the state and visit with everyday Montanans who are struggling with making a dollar and making sure that they can make, you know, work to make the future better for the next generation and make sure that their kids and their grandkids get better paying jobs, there's a lot that can be done. We can look at increasing Pell Grants, and we can look at Family Medical Leave Act, and we can look at all these extra areas where people just need a leg up. And so I'm a proponent for increasing the paid family medical leave act, the fact that people can take leave and not get paid, and the fact that, you know, we have an aging population and we should include aging parents and aging grandparents in that formula as well. People need to take leave from work for a lot of different reasons, and we need to make sure that we're supporting them in those efforts, and it helps everybody when we allow that to happen.
Mr. Breckinridge.
There are only 39 enumerated powers in the Constitution, and that's not one of them. So here is one more example of more government intruding into what is the state's business. When you start a business, you don't go to you file your articles of incorporation not with the federal government. You incorporate them with the state. That's where it's held. And if the state then decides that is what they want to do, then you'll find out if you want to work in that state or not. Now, I had a small business. I haven't been as a government employee other than when I was in the service of the BLM and for a few years in the Army and with Flathead County. But I had 18 people. I had 18 employees. And if I didn't treat them right, they were out the door. No one needed to come down on top of me to say, you're going to do this with a heavy hand of government, one more thumb. And if I didn't show them appreciation and the skill sets that they brought, then they left. And you know what? I never had anybody quit on me. Because at the end of the year, I did that what was right. And they stayed. We profit shared. We did a lot of good things together. But I didn't need one more layer of bureaucracy on top of me already swimming in, you know, $5,000 every 2 weeks of tax payments. Let me tell you how hard that is to get put together, all right? So if you think that government is the solution to more and more burden on top of already struggling small businesses, go to the state. It's not the feds. It's only 39 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. There's no more. If we stay within that limits, the federal government will be reined in. It's a state issue. We'll leave it right there.
Thanks very much. The next question is from Colin Hayes in regards to prison reform.
Hi, and I guess thank you for this opportunity. So, my question...
Can you move closer to the mic?
Is this better? So, in the 1980s, there were around 250,000 people incarcerated in the United States. Now that number is in the millions. How do you think such laws, such as mandatory minimums, which were enacted in the 80s and 90s, or the three strikes law, has contributed to the rise in the prison population? And what are your ideas on prison reform at the federal level and to reduce recidivism rates?
Mr. Breckenridge, you're starting this one.
Look at the increased incarceration rates and look at what the offense is. It's a direct result of the war on drugs. Now, when the United States decided that it wanted to ban, to prohibit the sale of alcohol, they amended the Constitution. They did it the proper way. And when they decided that wasn't going to work, they repealed it. Now what we have is an organization within the executive branch that makes selling raw milk a crime. We have people who assemble for home school and they violate assembly laws and they go to jail. This war has got to stop. And it's got to stop now. And look at those rates. He didn't tell us, but look at the rate of incarceration for blacks and Indians. All right? This is atrocious. This is taking a segment of society, targeting them because they're in economic depressed areas, and they got no way out. This is the travesty of our present two-party system, and this is the direct result. And reform in the prison won't do any good unless we call a halt to the war on drugs.
Thank you, Ms. Juneau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually agree with a lot of that. I think there's, you know, the war on drugs has created this system where we have a disproportionate people of color serving time in our prisons. The idea that there's a move away from private prisons, I think, is good. There's a lot to be done, and the idea that we have mandatory sentencing for crimes that, you know, can be handled in a different way, I think. You know, we have in our state right now drug courts, we have veterans courts. I actually went to a graduation of a drug court where the judge is still in charge, and, you know, they come, people come in front of them, and they help rehabilitate. And they help with reunification of their family. And they go through a longer process, but it's much friendlier. And it's about humanity and making sure we're not just shutting people away to serve some time, but actually trying to encourage them to come back in and be contributing citizens to our society. That's a better route for us to be. There are some crimes that are bad and that people should be put away for. But the idea that we have, you know, these areas, you know, I grew up in Browning, and we have areas around the country that have very high poverty, and we have, you know, crimes that are happening there, and the law enforcement, you know, we need to look at all of these issues and make sure we're doing a full court press on reforming law enforcement, reforming our judicial system, reforming sentencing, and reforming prisons. And there's a lot of work to be done, but I do agree that, you know, this war on drugs has actually created overburdened prison systems. And we can do better than that.
Thanks. Yeah, I think you're up, Chris.
Yes. Our final question for the story self portion of this forum comes on the topic of a Medicaid and Medicare expansion, asked by Nick Payton.
Hey, I'm Nick Payton. I'm a student here in Bozeman. And my question is, so you both know that medical debt's a huge cause of personal bankruptcies in the U.S. My best friend and roommate, as well as members of my extended family, are buried under like 4 or 5 figures of medical debt and still can't afford their medications, let alone start paying down their debt. So what's your position on allowing Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate prescription drug prices the same way that the Indian Health Service and the Veterans Affairs does?
Mr. Breckenridge.
You know, this is one that's hitting pretty close to home, too. We all have, you know, grandkids that are on Medicaid or nieces and nephew. The expansion of Medicaid into Medicare is going to be a very, very tight rope to walk. Veterans Administration, I'm in the VA system. I'm part of it. And that is my primary health care provider. And the situation that you're referring to here with your college roommate is a very tragic part of the way that we administer health care. Now, I don't know if any of these systems are going to help him or not without knowing some particulars. There's certain things that the VA won't provide for us. And we have to accept those things. To say, you know, a blanket, we're going to throw more money at it, I don't know that that's going to be a proper venue. However, what I will say is this, is that this kind of application could be administered more readily through the state in a block grant by the feds for this indigenous or this type of health that you have on your college campuses. I mean, I used, when I was in college, I used the college health program whenever I needed it. So I know it's there. I know it's a good program. This is very unfortunate, and I'm not sure that Medicaid expansion would help him in this case or not. There could be a few other avenues, but we'd have to have a few more particulars.
Superintendent Juneau.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the costs, the rising costs of health care right now are out of control. And that goes with prescription drug costs as well. And I'm a proponent of letting Medicare and Medicaid negotiate those prescription drug prices. The price gouging that's going on right now, the rising costs of life-saving medicines. I visited with a woman recently about the EpiPen. And those are really very real stories right in our state where people are having to decide between putting food on the table, paying rent, or getting life-saving medicine. That's the wrong place for our country to be. And it's the wrong place and the wrong position to put Montanans in. And anything we can do to make sure that we are bringing those costs down so that they're more affordable again, I think is a good place to be. And this really goes, you know, we have, because of the Affordable Care Act, you know, there are definitely things that need to be fixed in that we, you know, the big issue is that we left the insurance companies in the driver's seat, and we need to do better, and we need to figure out a way to lower health care costs across this country right now. But every time Congress and extremists in Congress take a vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, they are forgetting about the tens of thousands of Montanans that now have access to health care. They're forgetting about the idea that pre-existing conditions are no longer preclude somebody from getting insurance. They're forgetting about the 25-year-old who can be on their parents' insurance to make sure that they get covered with health care costs. We don't need to repeal, we need to fix it. And that's where we need to sit down and have common sense solutions to getting this issue fixed. You know, I'm not denying it's a big issue, but every time that they sit down and try to repeal and talk about that, like Congressman Zinke does, they're wasting taxpayer money and taxpayer time, and we need somebody who's actually going to provide leadership and try to get this actually fixed.
Thanks, you two. This next segment is from online submissions, so we tried to make it as crowdsourced as possible, and so these are all from the public in regards to tonight. So this question's on the environment, and it was submitted by Catherine Segura. How can we strengthen our regulations to reduce the possibility of an oil pipeline breaking or spilling, therefore contaminating our water? Ms. Juno, go ahead and go first.
Yeah, so these are, you know, I would just go back to my land board record. And, you know, not besides just increasing access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres, we've actually done responsible natural resource development across this state. You know, I took a vote to expand the state's largest underground coal mine. I also took a vote not to develop an area for coal mine because we're looking out for the future beneficiaries. It's about cost. It's about generating revenue off those lands. We do a lot of oil and gas development and lease out land, things, parcels of land for that. We do a lot of timber cutting and making sure that we're putting people to work in the woods, but also generating revenue from our timber industry as well. And recently just went forward with a solar development as part of state lands. And so I have a really good record on there, and we do some really interesting things with development across this state. We know climate change is real, and we know that we need to figure out a pathway forward with greener energy and making sure we're doing the, you know, transitioning forward. We have energy everywhere in this state. We have hydro, and we have wind, and we have solar now. And so I think there's a great potential for Montana to actually be energy leader. As far as pipelines, one thing that I was a leader on the land board is when oil companies would come before the land board, we used to grant leases permanently for underground pipes. Now, as a result of my leadership and pushing on the DNRC and making sure we're doing our job, we actually have, you know, require oil companies to dig deeper, especially when they're going under rivers and creeks, and making sure that they're digging deeper in case there ever is, God forbid, a break, that it's going to take a while to get there. And we also put terms on their easements now, so that they have to come back in front of the land board after several years to make sure they're doing the job. And so it is those small things that we can take efforts on. I have a record on that. But we can be real leaders in this state as far as energy development and making sure we're doing it right.
Thank you. Mr. Breckenridge?
You're going to have to repeat the question because I don't think that it got answered. It was all kind of over. Was it about natural resource and development of natural resource, or was it just on the oil pipeline?
It's about regulations in regards to the oil pipeline.
All right. Okay. I think I can handle that.
Okay.
Quite simple. You hold those officers accountable for their actions. Right now, if they break a pipeline or a pipeline breaks, no one investigates to find out if there's any negligence that's been involved. No one looks and says, all right, give me all your maintenance records. I want to see what you did here. I want to see your construction notes. I want to see how you put that thing in there together. And have accountability from the very beginning, from the time that that easement is granted until that oil is coming out on the other side. And if there is negligence in there, you hold them accountable at the state level individually for what they did or what they haven't done, more importantly. Right now, all we do is slap them on the hand and they pay a fine. They go, big deal. Look what Iceland did with their bankers. They held them accountable and they cleaned up their mess just that fast. We don't hold people accountable for their actions. And if their actions are negligent, just like you, if you're out there in a car and you drive and you hit somebody and they say you're negligent, guess what? You're held responsible. And if you're held responsible criminally, you go to jail. What's the matter with doing that? Same thing. We don't have accountability. We just make the approval and then we turn around and let them go. And if we have a problem, then we go, here's a $100,000 fine. And they go, okay, I write the check. So you and I as Montanans have a right to a clean and healthful environment. That's a constitutional guarantee. Federal government doesn't need to be involved in this. This is the state. All right? The state and the waters, the under those beds of navigable waters like the Yellowstone, you know what? The state owns those under the equal footing doctrine. That's state land. Take and be accountable for it, and you make them sign on the bottom line, just like a corporation officer does when he gets a loan. He waives his right not to come after him individually. We need to do the same thing.
Thank you both.
All right, our next question is regarding equal pay from Jan Strout. Recent studies from the Center for American Progress and the American Association of University Women indicate that even after completing a college degree, there is a big difference in men's and women's earnings that continues to widen the gender pay gap within 10 years after graduation. In your capacity, if elected as our congressperson, what will you do concretely to help end gender inequality regarding wages? And we will start with Mr. Breckinridge.
You're asking on a federal level, and that's not one of the 39 enumerated powers of the Congress. You don't have that power, not delegated to you. That's a state issue. And that's where it needs to reside. As a libertarian, we want to get rid of the overreaching hand of government. It's like it's this sword of Damocles over the top of everybody that no one ever wants to say anything about. But if we limit the government, and the state then is where it rightly resides, they're the ones that says, all right, corporation, we either license you or we don't. If you don't apply by the rules of Montana, you're not going to do business here. You're not. And we need to have that discussion amongst us, a forum within the state, not have it mandated down from above and enforced by more government and more government. If you saw the paperwork I had to do just for 18 employees and the federal government I's and T's that I had to dot and cross, it's staggering what it takes away from your productivity. It's a state issue. It needs to reside there. Article 1, Section 8, pretty straightforward. Here's what we're going to legislate. Here's the enumerated power that you have. And the problem that we have is we've overreached it, and the state has said, yeah, go ahead and do it. Go ahead, take it. And now we got two masters, and we can't satisfy either one. Give it to the state. State needs to take the bull by the horns. We got a Department of Labor and Industry. That's where it needs to go.
Thank you. And Superintendent Juneau?
So 100 years ago, Jeanette Rankin ran for Congress. Before women had the right to vote, and Montanans elected her. You know what her issue was then? Equal pay for equal work. You know, and 100 years later, a century later, it's time for another woman to go to Congress and advocate for that issue. We need to do better as a country. So one thing, you know, that concrete thing, I would vote for the Paycheck Fairness Act. I think it's a fair place for people to be so women can actually have a voice in finding out what their colleagues are paid and figuring out a way forward. And so I'd be a proponent of that. You know who's not? Congressman Zinke. Congressman Zinke did not vote for the Paycheck Fairness Act. He voted against a lot of different issues that are household economic issues. He's voted to slash Pell Grants. He's not taking votes that are supporting Montanans who are just trying to get a leg up and make their life better. So I look forward to being your next Congresswoman and advocating for that issue that Jeanette Rankin fought for 100 years ago as well.
Thank you, Superintendent Juneau.
Our next question returns us back to the environment and pipelines. It is obviously a very major concern for Montanans. With multiple pipeline spills in Montana that have wreaked havoc on beautiful rivers, costing millions in cleanup, and altering those rivers forever. What are your plans to keep the Missouri River and citizenry safe from the pipeline currently planned, the North Dakota Pipeline Project and the Keystone Pipeline Project? And I'll start with Superintendent Juneau first.
You know, those are difficult issues. They're difficult issues because, for me, you know, I grew up on the Blackfeet Reservation. I'm an enrolled member of the Mandan-Hidatsa tribes. And what I respect are tribes stepping up and making sure that their voices are heard on all these issues. The idea that treaty rights are protecting their governmental sovereignty, and over in North Dakota where they are protesting the corporations that are moving in there and on their sacred land, I think it's a good thing for them to bring attention to that and make sure that the federal regulations are followed. And the idea that tribal consultation is going to happen now are good. As far as, you know, pipelines coming through this state, I know that our workers depending on it. Right now the Keystone Pipeline is off the table, and if it came in front of Congress, and when I'm there, I'm going to take a really close look at it. My job is to represent all of Montana and to be the sole voice for 1 million Montanans and make sure that I listen to them when those big issues come in front of them. We do have a right to a clean and healthful environment here in this state, And I have a good record on the state land board of making sure that we're always looking out for the future and taking each one of those issues one by one. You know, when it came to an Otter Creek vote that I took early in my tenure on land board of not developing an area in Montana for coal, I went down there and I visited with the Northern Cheyenne tribe and I visited with the landowners, and they were not supportive of developing that. They also, you know, it was about the water there, but at the end of the day, it was also about the price. And the price that the state was not going to get was high enough. And so I think on Keystone Pipeline, I think on the North Dakota Access, I think on coal mining, on all those issues that come in front of you, you have to take each one of those by themselves, talk to Montanans, and figure out how you're going to best represent them.
Mr. Breckenridge.
You know, the Missouri River's not all ours. Okay? We're just stewards of it when it passes here from the headwaters and heads on downriver. Okay? It's everybody's, and it's everybody's concern. So if the Keystone Pipeline does not have a direct national interest in it, what are we even doing discussing it? And right now, there is no national interest in the Keystone Pipeline. It doesn't pursue any of our internal energy policies. It doesn't put forward any of our domestic policies. It's for a foreign corporation. It's not for us. So that Keystone Pipeline, we're convinced on a national level that it has a national priority, no. And that Missouri River, we had better be good stewards of it, because it's going downstream. And you know what they say about the person who does their laundry downstream from someone else. All right? They're not getting the best water. All right? So let's make this a Montana issue. And we're going to make sure that we have everybody's interest involved. And if that pipeline isn't in pursuit of our domestic policies and our energy policies, no, it's not happening. I got to be convinced, and I'm not.
Thank you, both of you.
All right, our next question was submitted by Alice Maxwell regarding medical marijuana. As a parent of a child with severe uncontrollable epilepsy, I want to try medical cannabis because it has been shown to control seizures. However, I have not. It is legal in the state of Montana, but is illegal federally. No one has been able to ensure me that I would not go to prison if I was distributing to a minor, which is what I would be doing. I keep hoping that if enough states legalize cannabis, then the federal government would follow suit and take it off the Class 1 drug list. Can you tell me your position regarding the declassification of medical cannabis? And we'll start with Mr. Breckenridge.
You got the libertarian issue right here. Set me up, I'm going to knock it out of the park. When Montana, by initiative, passed the medical marijuana and put it into law, and you had 35 senators, including Congressman Zinke, in the Senate, and 70 members of the House, and a Democrat governor, 106 people overturned the will of the people, that made me mad. Not only it made me mad, it made me so angry. Because here by initiative, the residents, the voters of Montana have spoken. And they, in their arrogance, overturned that will. Now, just not even a month ago, the Obama administration had a chance to do just that. And they chose to keep it a Class 1 dangerous narcotic. And I feel for this woman. I had a medical marijuana card. For my back is the only thing that relieved it. I've been on prescription narcotics, and I said, forget it, I can't take this anymore. In 1990, I was hit by a car. I was standing behind my car, and a guy hit me at 65 miles an hour and smashed me between two cars. I'm fortunate I can even walk. But that was a source of non-narcotic, pain relief that I wish that she could have. And for the arrogant politicians in the state of Montana to overturn the will of the people, and for the federal government to ignore the national consensus is an abomination. And we need to pass the medical marijuana initiative in this election cycle.
Thank you. And Superintendent Juneau?
Yeah, so again, I agree with Mr. Breckenridge. I think, you know, I recently visited with somebody, you know, and I know that medical marijuana can help a lot of people. And we just talked about prescription drug costs recently, you know, just a few minutes ago. And this is one way as well that we can make sure that it's part of the system and it's moving out. And I visited with somebody recently who is investing in medical marijuana research. And the idea now, and he has a father who suffers from clinical depression and has his whole life. And they are now looking at ways that they can create these new strains of medical marijuana that can specifically address different types of mental health disease. Anxiety, clinical depression, you know, and take care of some of those issues. And the fact that it helps so many other people with debilitating critical needs as well, I think is, you know, that it should be part of our drug system and the prescription drug things. And I don't see anything wrong with moving in that direction.
Thank you. Anyone moving from one country to another is considered a migrant unless he or she specifically is fleeing a war or persecution. Then they are a refugee. Refugees are seeking asylum in the United States. Would you have plans to monitor, track, or identify them? Go ahead, Superintendent Juneau.
You know, the idea that this issue keeps rising up in this campaign season, I mean, it is very serious. And I do think that first and foremost in all these conversations, American safety, both here and abroad, need to be number one. You know, that we have these areas and these pockets of instability across the globe that really need addressing, but also the fact that we have people fleeing these civil wars and terrorist activities. We need to also remember as Americans that we have this humanitarian side. And right now, you know, there's a lot of conversation about unvetted refugees coming into Montana, and nobody in, at least I'm not talking about unvetted refugees. We are talking about a process now that is done by multiple agencies that can take up to 2 years to get through, and it's for a very small percentage of people who are actually fleeing those countries. You know, and I, for one, when I think of those families and those children coming from those countries, I can't forget the pictures of babies washing up on shore and the atrocities that are happening in those countries. And as Americans, we need to remember that we have that humanitarian side that we always have. And as long as the vetting process is thorough, that there is this long process that people are undergoing, we need to remember that we can bring them into this country. You know, one thing that I would say is Congressman Zinke actually took a vote to do away with the Department of Homeland Security. That's putting American safety at risk. And we need somebody in there who's going to do better and can remember that we have a humanitarian side as Americans as well.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Breckenridge.
As a surveyor, I have to get down to the bottom of the problem. Every problem. In this case, we got to quit bombing these countries and arming these people that is causing these refugee crisis. Right now, we had 500 troops in Syria. Was there a national discussion on this, or was there a congressional debate on this? Who knows what has been funded in there? I grew up during Vietnam, and I saw the picture of the little Vietnamese girl running naked down the road after she'd just been napalmed. Okay, that had a mark upon me that I'll never forget. We got to quit bombing these people and causing these crises and then say, oh, hey, let's bring in a Red Cross. We're humanitarians. We're gonna take you in over here. No. Stop the insanity. What are we in right now? 134 countries. Is that necessary? Have we had congressional oversight on any of it? No. Not one bit of it. And so on one side, we're shoving the military-industrial complex more money to create the problem that we're now trying to solve by relocating people that we dislocated. This is insanity. We have to stop it. We got to stop it now. And it's going to take you and I to do it, because the two-party system isn't going to do it. We have to rise up and say, enough is enough. Stop it. We're tired of it.
Thank you.
I was going to say, Mr. Breckinridge and Superintendent Juneau, thank you both for your sharing your thoughts and insight on a number of conversations and wide-ranging ideas. We will now start with closing statements. You are both given 2 minutes, and we will start with Mr. Breckinridge.
I'm going to make an appeal across this state. I'm going to start with you discontented, or you marginalized Bernie Sanders voters who felt the burn. 151,000 of you voted for Bernie Sanders, and you felt that burn. Remember how you felt. And then when you found out that the Democrat National Committee rigged the gig against you, and how you felt that burn again. All right? I'm going to ask you this on November 8th to make them feel the burn this time. Hillary Clinton called you guys a bunch of basement dwellers. That's the respect that they have for you. I know how you feel. The Libertarian Party is ready and willing to take you in. And with you, we can make a difference. And I'm going to appeal to our voters across Indian country, too. You guys have been mistreated for 160 years by both parties. It's time for a stop. A libertarian has never done anybody any harm, ever. And we will not do anybody any harm, because we will be within the confines of the Constitution. Come over to the Libertarian Party. And you Republican voters out there who felt the message heard by Dr. Ron Paul and have been marginalized by Republicans and pushed aside, there's a place for you. There's a place for you where you can activate and become attached and become involved with Bernie Sanders voters, with Indian voters, all right? And this is the only place you can do it. There is a wall greater than the Great Wall of China that's been built by these two parties, and you've heard it tonight, blaming each one for this and each one for that. It's a time for the blame game to stop, and we have got to connect. We have got to be united as individuals, and not this party or that party. They're the cause of the problem. Ladies and gentlemen, join with me to stop the insanity. Vote Libertarian.
Superintendent Juneau, you have 2 minutes for a closing statement.
Sure. I would just say the first rule of politics is show up. First rule. And so I'd actually like to thank Mr. Breckinridge for showing up, and I wish I could thank Congressman Zinke for being here, but I can't, because he chose not to. He chose not to talk to you about the issues that our state faces. He chose not to attend and give his vision for our state and our country. He chose not to be here. And so you should remember that come Election Day. There is a stark contrast in this race. And I would just point to Congressman Zinke of always looking out for himself. After 90 days on the job, he thought he could be Speaker of the House. He actually auditioned to be Trump's vice president. And now that Trump's actually made these egregious comments about every population in America, and most recently about degrading women and talking about sexually assaulting women, Congressman Zinke has not backed down his support. That's the wrong place for a Montana representative to be. He talks a lot about representing all Montanans. That, to me, is not representing all Montanans. That's leaving 50% of the population to struggle for themselves. When you elect me, you're going to get somebody who is a century, like we talked about Jeanette Rankin, a century later, it's time to elect a congresswoman to the House of Representatives. It's time for Montana to step up, and we can be history makers in electing the first American Indian woman to Congress. Think how exciting that is. And those are bonuses. Montana will also get somebody who has a proven record of accomplishment, who's worked with communities across the state, who's a reasonable, rational, common sense person who's raised graduation rates to historic highs in this state, who's expanded access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres, and can stand on a record of accomplishment and working shoulder to shoulder with communities across this state. And I ask for your vote in November. Thanks a lot.